Hello, everyone. This week's guest is none other than Matt Maurizio. Matt is a former teammate of mine at Northeastern University. We both played baseball there. Go Huskies. Matt and I also grew up in Waltham, Mass., a small town just west of Boston. Grew up playing baseball there, went to high school together. Matt is a doer of all things, you could say. He has 5 children. He has a wife. He has a full-time job. He finds time to work out. He finds time to do his own podcast. He is a doer of all things, and I think this episode offers a lot of great insight on, you know, time management, money. He's in the financial services industry, and just life. I mean, I think there's a lot of useful stuff in this episode. I got a lot out of it. I hope you do too. Hope you enjoy the show. Episode 4, Matt Maurizio. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of a podcast at AWOL Print Shop. I'm very excited for our next guest today. I'll let him kind of describe himself in a little bit, but Matt Maurizio, man of mystery, man of all things, man of a beer lover, man of faith, financial advisor, former pro baseball player, a friend of mine. We grew up together in the Ham, Waltham.
Yep.
I'm so happy for him to be here. I'm so happy that I decided to break open my 3-year-old barrel-aged affogato.
Oof. My all-time favorite.
I figured, why not? This is a good episode to do that, and what better person to share this with?
Means a lot, man. I
appreciate it. Coming from I really appreciate lover. You being here. Yeah. You know, Matt has been through a lot. He's experienced a lot. He has 5 kids.
Yeah, don't forget that.
Yet he finds time to advise other people, do a full-time job, find time to work out.
Yeah.
Find time to have a beer every once in a while.
Doing podcasts.
Doing podcasts. Find time to take care of his animals. Oh, we'll get into that too as well. Because I feel like you're a man of all things. And yeah, I'm really happy for you to be here. Yeah. And
thank you, man.
How's everything going?
Thank you for having me. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of that is really my wife, Addie. I couldn't do it if she wasn't there. We try to support each other, obviously, through the whole thing, but she definitely takes the brunt of the support side on allowing me to do these things. But yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff. And you said it. You said it. Find time. And the truth is, I mean, if I didn't make time for the important stuff, it just wouldn't happen. It's the only way to make things happen. You just gotta make time. We all get 24 hours. It sounds so cliche, but like, if you make time for something that's a priority, you do it. And if you don't prioritize it, it's gonna pass you by if you have 5 kids and farm and all that good stuff.
I think that's, you make time to drink a beer, you make time to see your friends. So that's one of the reasons why I did this, is that one, it allows me to reflect on just stuff, because we're so busy. I mean, I don't have a family yet.
Yeah.
But hopefully I will later on, but.
What episode's that on?
I don't know. We'll see. We're going to Hawaii, so. Hey, Liz is probably going to kick out of that. But anyways, going back to what I was talking about, is like, that's one of the reasons why I did this, in order to kind of stay in the moment, because we kind of lose track of some things from day to day, especially when we're doing side hustles, when we're doing, you know, other having podcasts, late night meetings, whatever it may be. It's important to find time to do stuff like this. It allows me to reconnect with old friends such as yourself too, as
so
well.
Good.
It allows me to talk about stuff. I think I mentioned in the last episode, I'm a very introverted person. I always been. But for some reason, this feels like more natural to communicate.
That's awesome.
It's a weird thing.
I wanted to comment and compliment you on it. I listened to the first couple, and I love yours and Liz's story, and your dynamic is really funny together. But on the first one, man, like, you opening up about about being adopted and what life is like when you don't, when you look different from your parents, but your parents raised you in a way that that wasn't even a factor until you were understood that it was a factor. Like, I've known you for decades maybe at this point.
Yeah.
And that's stuff that, like, that the Z I know, Z, sorry guys on the podcast listening, Z I call him, Brad Czarnowski. That's the Brad that, like, I don't know that Brad, you know? And listening to it, I'm like, this is what it's about. This is the, like, this is the real stuff that actually matters. Because eventually, like, you can only talk about pro sports and football and the weather and all that shit. Stuff, excuse me.
You can say shit.
So much. I also heard Liz
We're drinking here.
Liz messed up a couple times in the corrector, so I told myself I wasn't going to cuss.
Take Liz's lead.
Yeah. So I think that you doing this, if this is an outlet for you to share your story honestly and transparently, man, it's phenomenal. Keep doing it because it's impactful.
Yeah. I also like have a lot of relationships that I've built through the years, either through, you know, AWOL Print Shop, through my job at BU, through my, you know, at Northeastern, we spent time together. We still keep in touch with those guys.
Yeah.
Guys that come into the store at Alston, you know, wanting to print stuff, or guys that just hang around the shop because they love the culture. They love sneakers. They love streetwear. I feel like just interacting with those people, why not? That's what a podcast is, right? It's like just capturing conversations, like interesting conversations.
Yep.
Like, we were just talking about something interesting before we started this thing. And it's like,
you don't want to
I wish
talking.
I was running. I wish I had this going. But
that's right. We'll get some interesting things.
Hopefully we'll get back to that. And actually, one of the conversations we're having with Kyle, and for those of you who don't know Kyle, he was a big part of like the startup with AWOL Print Shop, and like what I was just trying to capture that vision. And he went to Mass Art for school, and he said, approached me because Liz, he worked with Liz at the North Face. He said, hey, why don't I do like a kind of just a recap of your day, so to speak, down in the basement, 31 Bank Street, Peter Lamb's house.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've been there. Yeah. Everyone's been there in Walton.
That's right.
And, you know, I'll pick you up. You can do whatever you want. I want this to be more about you and what you want to get out of it. Tell me what you want to do. We were down there in the basement. I think it was at one point like 100 degrees. We had to bring like an extra pair of shorts and a shirt. That's how hot it was. So those are the days that you know, obviously you talk about more about like you got to go through the bad to get to the good. But him creating that video for me, and then us reconnecting like 2 weeks ago about something that happened in his life, and just us having that conversation was like, it kind of catapulted me to start this thing.
Really?
I was like, wow, we should have been like recording that, because that was a really good conversation. And that's, I
love that.
I mentioned, you know, at an early episode that BU, I was like, oh, I love, you know, just helping people, like my students, like get through hard times or solve a problem, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I figure why it's a no brainer. Whether people listen or not, hopefully people do listen and they get something out of it, whether it's just like a little tidbit.
Yep.
Or they become fans and listen to it.
Yeah. You know? Either way.
Yeah.
You're right. If you can help. I mean, we all are wired to feel good when we help people. That's kind of like how we are. That's kind of all of our whys to some degree.
Yeah.
So like this podcast, if one person out there hears something that they, even if it's not them, but they're like, man, I know somebody that needs to hear that, and sends it to that one, game changer for them. And
absolutely.
Then that's why you do it.
Yeah. You need another beer.
All right.
I think that's a good segue.
It's a good segue. What?
So we have this cup of water here, and I want you to, I told you what I wanted you to do with it before, but you pour it in.
Just a little bit.
From stout to hops, you need to rinse it out. But also, if you didn't know this, Matt.
Tell me.
So I don't know if you've been to a brewery and they rinse your glass before they pour.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that.
Tell me.
Because when you're pouring out of a keg or even out of a can, like the friction in between the glass and the CO2
okay.
creates more foam, so you get a smoother pour when you have just like the glass is wet.
Wow.
So that's the reason why you see, know, if you go to a brewery, they have that, you know, push down thing where it just sprays all the water in.
Right.
Or even, you know, at Mystic back in the day when, you know, shout out to Mystic and they're gone now. They used to dip it into just like a bucket like this.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
A little tidbit. See, you learn something every day.
This is why I do this podcast, to listen.
So what do we have here next? What are we going to drink next?
You got to tell me. You're the host.
All right. Yeah, I think you have your hands on that one right there. This
Small Galaxy Everything.
By Other Half.
Other Half.
Shout out to Sean Butler, my guy in New York, who sends me those things. We do...
Sending that Axie to
that
you.
Axie, that small Axie air thing.
Oh. Look at that.
Yeah, it's a solid beer.
Never met some of the Axie I didn't like. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so the beers are one of the things we share in common.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's kind of a... For those that are outsiders, I think it's like a weird thing.
Yeah.
People are like, why do you do that? Da, da, da. Like... But when I can relate to it in the sense that I love food,
mm-hmm.
and I appreciate good food. I think, you know, in that episode with Liz, I was talking about,
yeah,
not to sound pretentious or anything, but I think we take it to the next level where we'll say, hey, I'll pay $300 for that tasting menu because I want to experience that.
Yeah.
And I'll appreciate it too as well.
Yeah.
Whereas someone might not, and they'll be like, "Oh, that was overpriced."
Yeah,
we'll say that too, but then we'll appreciate little things that happen in that dinner.
Yeah.
So I think that translates to beer, where that's why I wait in line sometimes. That's why you might find me at Trillium Fenway during my lunch break now.
Yeah.
And my coworker know that, so I could say this on the podcast. So. And that's why I send beers to guys in New York, and they send it back to me.
Yep.
That's why I'll go to Treehouse and wait in line for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas people might look at us and they think it's crazy.
Yep.
But in reality, you know, as you can tell from our first sampling offering.
You know what? I think of it, if you want to talk about the finance world a little bit, it's about, to me... It's making a decision based off worth, not price. And that's totally worth it to you, regardless of the price. And I think that's really, when you get to that point, you have a healthy relationship with money. And I mean to transition into that, but it was reminding me, as you're saying it, like, the people that are unhealthy with money make every decision based off of a price tag. And I'm not saying you should go to, I'll give you an example, like, I'm going to go to Whole Foods and spend $10 on a stick of broccoli, a head of broccoli, versus go to Market Basket and spend $3 on the same head of broccoli. That might not make sense. Okay, like, sure, maybe the price is an influence there, unless I'm driving 3 hours to get to my Market Basket just to save $7. Like, nah, that's not worth it. But when you get into your level of like what you were talking about with like $300 tasting menus, somebody who doesn't appreciate food or care about it is not going to think that's worth it, and all they're going to complain about is how much it costs, and it's not for them.
They won't look past that.
No,
they'll
never
look past that.
Never. But I will guarantee, like, if you go to buy a sweater for your mother who is sick, right, and maybe doesn't have many more years left in life, and her favorite thing is some pink knit sweater that she told you about, you're going to go and you're going to grab the sweater and you're going to put it on the cash register and walk out the store, and you don't care what it costs, because it's not about the price at that point. It's a worth thing. But it's a really healthy relationship with money when you can get to the point of saying, like, I'm buying worth, I'm not buying price. I can relate it to, I've spent some money on a couple, like, business conference organizations, trips, things like that, that will run, like, you know, thousands of dollars. And I will do that, and I'll say, yeah, I'm going to do that. That makes sense to me. I'm going to do that because I think it's worth it. I think it will impact my business, impact my family's life, change my life, change others' lives that I'm working with. I will at the same time question whether or not like $250 on a pair of jeans is actually the right thing to do. You know, if I'm looking at price, a few grand on a 2-day conference versus $250, I should just buy the jeans and stay home.
Those jeans will look damn good on you too.
Thanks.
Damn good on you.
I work on my squats. But when you're thinking about worth, not price, it's a different mindset, and in my opinion, a healthier one.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks.
You have a lot of good points, Matt.
Mm. All right, we're only like one beer in, half a beer in, really.
Moral to the story, go to $300 tasting menus.
Yeah, buy on worth, not on price.
Yeah. I'm trying to think how I can relate to that. I think I do that.
I really do.
I think I do that.
I literally got it from you, from what you just said, yeah, made me think of it. So.
But there's also a responsibility factor too as well.
Agreed.
There's also
completely
that other side of things where, for example, when my beer fridge is 60 deep and it holds 65 beers, and there's a new release of Trillium and I really want it, I guess there's obviously a stock factor, but in reality it's like, oh, I have too much beer. You get through what you have and you move on. I don't know if that relates to it or not, but
that's all right.
Beer is good.
Yeah, bottom line, it's an experience. So like, I appreciate what you said in that podcast about eating and the experiences, the conversations that come from that food. And to me, it's like as old as time. Like, people have spent time breaking bread around the table, and that's where like real life happens. So it makes sense that you're out at a fine dining experience and you and Liz share some of the most closest and most intimate, most interesting conversations, because you're around a table where everybody shares their passions, right, their life, their stories.
Yeah. We like to sit at the bar when we go out. So let me tell you why.
Okay.
Well, there's a reason why.
Pro tip.
Not really a pro tip, but
okay.
I think it's just more of like a, that's what we like. We like to sit at the bar, be close to, we feel like you get quicker service there. Not that that's a good thing, but.
Yeah.
Honestly, and I'm not saying this is the reason why it happens, but we always like either get comp something or, hey, here's a dessert. Oh, hey, try this from the chef.
Yeah, I gotten that before.
Because I think they, everyone has, but it happens to everybody. I'm not saying it just happens to us, but I feel like if they see that, and they see the appreciation, and you're ordering certain items, and you're asking the right questions, and you show that you're really passionate about, like, oh, we're really excited about this experience that you're going to have with this food, that they're going to look at that and be like, oh, yeah, you know, like, they recognize that, and that's the reason why some of those things happen.
Totally.
And I think that's one of the reasons, that's also exciting for us, is like, hey, you know, it makes you feel special a little bit.
Yeah.
Even though it does happen to, like, a lot of people, but that's... We like to sit at the bar. We feel like we're more in tune with, like, you know, you get to have a conversation with the bartender about the drinks, about the food, whereas the waiter and waitress will be, like, in and out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's not just, like, you know, we could still talk to each other, but the bartender's there, and they see, or you ask a question about something, and they're oftentimes bartenders are there. They're busy and working, but sometimes they're just looking to talk to people. That's part of their job.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
That's what they kind of make money on too as well. But we find that we really enjoy those conversations. And
it's awesome.
Getting into that, like, oh, you know, you should try this, or, you know, did you ever try this drink? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then we talk about, like, other restaurants that they've been to. So it goes on and on. But we always like sitting at the bar because of that. And you also get to sit down, you know, if you wait for a table. Oftentimes you just go to the bar, find a seat.
Grab a seat, sit down.
Yeah, food is good.
I love it. Beer, food.
I feel like we talk about sports.
Mm. All right, let's do it.
Let's talk about sports.
I don't talk a ton about sports in my life, so I'm in.
Yeah.
Not anymore. 5 kids at home. I don't have a ton of sports combos anymore, let's do it. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, we grew up playing baseball together.
Yep.
Post 156.
Ooh, Legion kid.
Oh. Shout out to Brownie.
Brownie. Brownie's still got that dip in his mouth.
Does that. Big chop.
Big chop. Big time.
We also played together at Northeastern. Go Huskies.
Yep, go Dawgs.
Were you 2 years behind me or 1 year?
Two, I think.
Two, okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember that because I remember you came on your recruiting trip.
Yep, yep.
That was a big deal.
That was a big deal for everybody that remembers it.
It was a good time. We sold you.
Yeah.
We sold you on the experience.
Hooked.
Just like a bartender at a restaurant.
Totally. I woke up the next morning and say, I think I had fun last night. I'm in.
Then you had to go to clinic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Northeastern was a good time. I think, you know, we were fortunate enough to be, you know, have some success. Well, I think pretty good success there.
First year LSU in the regionals. First year.
That was your first year?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a great first year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Went all downhill from there.
Set the bar high.
It's real
high. That was awesome. That was a great experience. I think I remember, my biggest memory, I think if you correct me if I'm wrong, it might be the same thing. We went to the parking lot after the game.
After we lost.
Yes. Smoke. We actually almost won that
game. Yeah, it wasn't bad.
11-8. I remember 11-8, we had bases loaded. Because I was on third base.
You
may have been on one of the bases.
I don't remember.
Tim Bush was up.
Mm-hmm.
Bushy was up. He had an absolute missile.
Yes.
And I say a missile because I heard it. Because I was on third base. It was in between me and the third baseman. And he caught it. He made like not a dive catch, but a pretty good catch.
Yeah.
A quick reaction.
Yep.
If that goes down the line, we're 11-10. And then you have a runner on third base and anything
happens. With some momentum.
Anyways, 11-8. Good game against the third ranked team in the country.
Like
that,
yeah.
They went to Omaha that year.
Yep.
Aaron Holt was on. Was it Aaron Holt? No. Brock. No. Aaron something. Played for the Sox.
Yep.
Anyways, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Parking lot after the game.
Yes.
You had a guy that had
the LSU tattoo.
Death Valley. The whole stadium at Death Valley, and Death Valley is a stadium where the football team plays in.
Yep.
Some people say it's the real Death Valley as opposed to Clemson, but that's another story for another day. He had that tattoo on his back.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Meanwhile, next thing you know, we're drinking Coronas.
Yeah.
We look over. Our coach Magoo.
Yeah.
Neil Magoo is pounding Coronas with limes.
Yep. Right next to us.
Eating jambalaya.
I feel like people got to picture this. We went in as the Northeast team to a regional down at LSU, coming in as the last seed, trying to battle. We did a pretty good job. 2-0, though, we're out, which is what the old saying of, like, 2 losses, you're out. We're done. We literally go out to the parking lot outside the stadium after we lose, and we party with LSU fans. Like, we just lost. We're kicked out of the tournament, and here we are eating jambalaya, drinking Coronas with LSU fans. It was an unbelievable experience.
I think that's still one of the things that top three things I remember most.
Yeah.
My
that was a ton of fun.
College athletic, student athlete experience.
Mm-hmm. You have to say that because you work at BU.
Yeah, I can say that, yeah. You're right.
You have to say
right.
Student
Thanks
athlete.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, and not to get all sappy again and
not do it.
Go back to some learned life lessons, but, you know, I cherish that experience. And for me, the game of baseball was fun, and obviously we loved to play.
Yeah.
But the thing I miss most is the relationships that I had with the other guys, such as yourself and, Manny, Armin, Jordy, all those guys. Bushy, Mart. Like, you can go on. We still keep in touch. And I think the fact that we spent so much time together.
Totally.
And we had some success because, it's more fun when you're winning.
Totally, yeah.
I just feel very fortunate to have that experience.
Yep.
Go ahead.
I don't know about you, but sports, athletics, they have I do know about you, but they've shaped who I am as a man today, no doubt. You know, I even being able to play one, you know, for five seasons after that, man, in the minor leagues, it just continued to reiterate, like, all of that stuff that athletics teaches, that I always say, like, if what happens in the world of athletics could literally just be like transported over to the rest of the world, there'd be very little issues, because you have like multiple races, multiple ages, genders, ethnicities, beliefs, all that stuff, cultures coming together to achieve a common goal, working together arm in arm, side by side. Maybe you don't call each other on a Friday night to drink beers, but when you show up to work, you all go into battle together, and you go and achieve this, or you're at least attempting to achieve this same thing on the same mission, and you got each other's back, even if you don't always agree with what you guys are doing, each other are doing. I'm like, that recipe, if that was how the entire world operated, would be a very, very easy place to be with very little issues.
Yeah, it connects people.
It's awesome.
It's just like food. Like going back to food, I don't need to keep talking about food. Can you tell I like food?
Tell me about it.
That in itself is, I think I can say this, speak the same thing that you just said about how I feel about approaching certain things in life.
Oh, that's the other part too.
And just being prepared. You know, working with teams, overcoming adversity, it goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And we played a pretty high level. I mean, you had the opportunity to play professional baseball. We'll get into that too as well. I want to hear about that side of things. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to do that, but I want to hear like that experience, because I think that's something that gets glorified, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I think that experience that you had, and you mentioned it in your posts and your podcast, I think that has kind of like really took it to the next level, because it's different from college.
Yeah.
It's different from college. So I guess I want to hear some of that.
All right.
Yeah.
So I would say college is much more of like a team bond together. We're in it. We're trying to accomplish this thing together, you know, by any means necessary. Professional sports is a little bit more like, I have a goal. We're all on the same team. I'm working to accomplish my goal. And if we all do that, then great, we might win too.
Right.
So winning is like prioritized in college. Individual performance would be prioritized professionally. But from a like a life lesson standpoint, I would say that professional sports is like a magnifying lens on all that happens maybe in college, because you are out there sort of on an island trying to compete, and you could be gone any day. That all of what you said, dealing with adversity, some of the stuff that like was big takeaways for me that I didn't know was happening in the moment is like you're always replaceable was probably one of the biggest takeaways for me.
There's always someone better.
So there's a story I like to tell, that like we were driving home from, I think it was Myrtle Beach. So in professional sports, minor leagues in baseball, you go from wherever you're living to the field usually, and then you play your game. After that, for the home game, you get on a bus at 11 o'clock whenever the game's over, after you've showered, go to your road stand, right? So then we had a 7-game road trip or something like that. You pack your bags before, bring them to the field, you load the bus, 7 games. It was like a 10-hour bus ride back. I remember this. And we got back to the field. So what happens is it kind of like the reverse. The bus will bring you back to your field. You drop all your baseball equipment off. You go get your car that's in your parking lot, and you drive home to wherever you live. So we're getting off at like 5 a.m. or something from the bus. And one of our teammates gets called into the coach's office at 5 a.m. after a 7-day road trip or something. And we didn't think anything of it. Partially because everyone's half asleep trying to like get off the bus and get home so they can sleep to get back to the field at like 1 or 2 o'clock. But when we get back at 1 or 2 o'clock, that guy was gone. Turns out he was given his plane ticket home and said, hey, thanks. Basically, your dream is done. You're done. You're home. And we show up to the field, and I remember showing up. And it's not like guys getting released was new to me. So, like, that wasn't the shocker, because spring training happens, everybody gets released every year. But showing up, somehow, like, that 5 a.m. visit to the manager's office, I show up not oblivious, completely oblivious, coming back. And what the first thing you kind of do is you walk in, you check the lineup cards to see if you're playing, where you're hitting in the lineup. That guy's name was gone from everything. Check the lineup, kind of 1 through 9. You check the extra players underneath. He's not there. But in his position, in his batting slot, is a new name. Walk into the clubhouse where his locker was. There's a new nameplate on it, his number, but a new name on the back of it. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. 7:05 happened. We played that game that night, and the train kept chugging. And I remember thinking to myself, like, damn, there's always someone there. You are, like, completely replaceable, because a fan from the outside watching that would have no idea that there was somebody released at 5 a.m. that same day, and there's a new dude in the spot that night. It's just like, you are replaceable. There's somebody there that can do what you do, maybe even better, and the train will keep chugging. And it was like a light bulb for me, because it became like kind of a way of life for me, is that, okay, I get it. I'm not the smartest, fastest, whatever, most gifted, but I recognize that, like, what's in my control is my work ethic, and I won't let anybody outwork me, and it will be on me to make it really difficult to replace me. Even though I know I am replaceable, I see that, and I'm living into an existence that I won't let it be easy to replace me, because I could see how easily that guy got replaced.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the biggest life lessons that sports taught me, baseball.
Would you say that put a lot more pressure on you too as well, as a negative, or did you feel like that was more of a positive?
That's a good question. I think in hindsight, it was positive. I think that I didn't understand how to make that a positive motivator. I think it was more of like a fear as a motivator. And to me, fear is kind of a cheap motivator. I think, like, positivity.
We all feel, yeah. Like, I could tell from me, like, I always pride myself on, like, being, it may not seem it, but, like, you're always nervous when you get up the bat, and you're always nervous in certain situations.
Yeah.
And when you're, you know, full count, man on second, and you have, you know, the winning runs on second base, and bottom of the ninth, and you're the home team, it's, you're nervous.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're nervous and you don't want to show it.
Yeah.
But I guess it always, ever since Little League, that was like a thing that I could, I wouldn't say overcome, but I think that was a positive thing for me.
That's cool.
It was something that I could not contain, because it always felt it, but it kind of made me rise to the occasion.
Yeah, that's huge.
Even though I think that was, like, if I could look at everything back in the day of, like, my accomplishments, I would pride myself most on that.
Yeah.
In rising to the moment.
Yep.
That sort of thing. I can always look back at that as a positive. I think what you just said, going from college baseball, we're all together, we're building that relationship, we're irreplaceable.
Yeah.
One. You can't replace, well, obviously we can kicked out of school and, you know, get cut from the team, but for us, you know, being recruited and on somewhat of a scholarship.
Yeah, right.
Being fortunate enough for that. We're there. We're gonna be on the team, and building that relationship with the people that were around us for 4 years, or for you and me and you for 2 years, that obviously helps things. And I think that's what catapulted us to being fortunate enough to win a championship.
Yeah.
But it's different in the pros. It's a business. It's a fucking business.
It's all it is.
That's all it is.
It really is
it's
business.
Like you're
it's more real world.
Out with the old and with the new.
Yeah.
At any time.
Yeah.
I think that's very fortunate for you to experience that, because I that would put a lot of pressure on me.
Yeah.
Like what you just said.
Yep.
I don't think, and maybe that would be a negative for me, because I didn't get a chance to play down the Cape when you did. And where you did.
Yeah.
But I played in, like, New York.
Yep.
For a summer. And I kind of felt the same way. I was like, you know, these guys, we're together the whole summer, but I felt like there was, you know, anytime you didn't perform to the coach's standard, you were not going to play the next game.
Yeah.
Whereas at Northeastern, like, you're a starter. You know what I mean? You have a bad game. Unless you go 0 for the century, which has happened to the best of us.
Can happen, for sure.
I felt like that was, like, kind of, like, how I can relate to what you just said.
Yeah. Yep.
That was the closest I came to that.
I get that. I think one other thing that's, there's so many other things, but one other realization, all of this stuff, I got to say, happened in hindsight, like what professional sports taught me, and I could talk to you about like just what a day-to-day is like, but I think the more interesting stuff is like, what did I learn? What did I pull from that those five seasons of my life?
Yeah.
And another big takeaway in hindsight, because in the moment, you're just sort of grinding, you don't really think about what's going on in your life. But reflecting on it, I recognize that like professional sports, and this is true about anything in life, like professional sports, when you get to there and you're playing, it's the same as college where like on high school, you're the best guy on the team kind of thing. Little league, high school, maybe one of the best. College, all of a sudden, you're not maybe not the best guy. Or if you are, you get to professional sports and you're not the best guy. At some point, you're not the best guy on the team. You're not the number three hitter and all that. But what ends up happening is having that level of competition, kind of like that, all of that temperature raise around you forces you to play up to that level. So it sort of raises your ability, your temperature, without you really even trying. You just have to. If you want to stay there, you have to raise your temperature. And I found that like in sports, it makes sense. People get that. But I found that so true in other areas of my life. Like the gym I train at Cressy Sports Performance. Shout out Cressy.
I got his shoes.
Oh, you did? You got the trainers?
I got those new joints.
I got them new joints.
Fire. Shout out to Eric Cressy.
Nice.
Yes.
I
haven't met him, but I'm a big fan.
Like that gym, I would say 315 on deadlift is probably like, at least on the trap bar deadlift, would be kind of like the minimum. Like 98% of the people in there are lifting that weight.
That'll make me feel good.
Yeah, there you go.
Just kidding.
But my point is, like, you're in there, like, you take three plates, 315 on a trap bar deadlift. First off, Planet Fitness or another
workout
chain
world.
Gym, Workout World may not even have a trap bar, but if they do,
they don't.
So
I can say they don't.
Okay, test it. They don't have it. So let's say even on a straight bar, you go and pull 315 in the middle of the gym training floor. You are going to get some looks like, what is this super freak doing? Like, what an animal. Whereas you're in that gym, in that environment, it your temperature is different. Like, that's the floor. What is the ceiling at Workout World is the floor at Cressy Sports Performance, you know? Yeah. And to me, it's just now my fitness temperature is raised because everybody else around me, I have people squatting double that. Like, shoot, okay, I got to rise to compete. And that's true, I've learned. In relationships, that's true in your faith, that's true in your finances, that's true in all areas of life you're trying to grow. You basically have to seek out, because they don't just come to you like a team does. You have to find people that are kind of operating at a higher level than you, where you want to operate at, and just like surround yourself with them.
That's why you're here for me.
Oh, my man.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay. I love this. This is about to get real.
I'm about to build you up. No. Mm-hmm. No, you do
but
it all, man.
That was
you
a huge
yeah.
That was a huge learning experience for me. In the moment, it was just sort of like, oh, yeah, dudes are good. I got to compete.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, I'm like, no, man, that was like, that because I've seen it happen in other parts of my life, I'm like, man, that's why.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. How often do you get to the Cressy?
About 3-4 days a week. Out in Hudson.
Always in the morning?
No, I've been, I had been on early morning workout train for a while.
Yeah.
But I recently switched. I was training with one of the trainers there called, his name is Cole Russo. He got a job with the Yankees as a strength coach there.
With Eric?
Yeah. He's one of the team, minor league team strength
awesome.
Coaches. Yep. So now, just this past week, started training with John O'Neill, director of performance there.
Yeah.
It's either a really good or really bad decision because I'm in a lot of pain. OJ, good work. But it's cool training with these guys. So my point of that is the hours have been a little bit differently. Thankfully, I'm in a career where I can kind of create my schedule. So my gym training now is right around like 7:30, 8 a.m. It had been as early as 5:30. It has been as late as 11 a.m.
Damn.
Sometimes I do like an 8 or 9 p.m. lift if I didn't get it in the day. But
that's where I'm at. I do 8 or 9
p.m., yeah.
You know, so.
But my mornings typically start 5:45, 5:15 anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah, it is awesome. I'm fortunate to meet your family. And
And we cooked up there. And I remember I saw you observing them fries. I saw you cook some fries on your own.
I got my skills in
there. After you saw that.
I got my skills in the kitchen. You know, I'm sure you've seen my IG posts and stuff like that.
I love them.
I love sharing that stuff.
Yep.
I have a question.
I love it.
We're not going to get deep in your family, but...
No, we should.
I call them a starting five.
Yeah.
Because you have five.
Yeah. Makes sense.
You got a point guard. You got a shooting guard. You may have two shooting guards, I think.
Yeah. Probably have a couple shooting guards.
I mean, they're forward, twins. Forward, and a center, I'd say. So, my question, and this is a little fun question. Like, well, if you could assign a position to your five kids... What would they be?
I mean, wow. That's awesome. I feel like...
Whoa. Right, hold on. All right, we have...
Hold on.
Now we're getting into a beer called Wonderful Complex Individual.
Yeah.
Which I think is fitting for Matt because he's a wonderful complex individual. Which is a stout with sweet potato.
Sweet potato.
Madagascar, vanilla, cinnamon, nutmeg. And it's pretty good.
All right.
It's a little thin, but...
Sorry, Trillium.
It has the flavors. Go ahead. Sorry. You're starting five in their positions.
Appreciate you buying me some time to think about my five. I'm gonna say... Joseph, my oldest, has to be the center. He's the tallest. How do I not? I'm gonna say that Nora is my daughter. The next one is probably point guard.
She's a cutie. I love watching the video. I saw the video that you posted. In May, she's in the suit. She's just that's awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah,
it was awesome. And I saw her back when she was like crawling.
Yeah, exactly right.
It's awesome.
Yeah, you've been part of that family for a while, Uncle Brad. I gotta tell a story about my son talking to you the night after you guys hung out at our place. yes. Point guard, and she's the point guard. I gotta say the twins are the two power forwards. Literally, they're a force to be reckoned with.
There's animals.
Two of them. Yeah,
animals. Is that they?
Yeah,
they're the ones that killed one of your chickens.
Yeah, well, yeah, I have a couple of them that killed chickens so far. Joseph's killed one. Nora's killed two, I think. and I think the twins might have one between them. Tug of war took a duck, a baby duck.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh man.
You ever seen a baby duck? They're really cute.
They're really cute.
Yeah,
I think ducks. Yeah,
like little yellow and fuzzy. So when you have a baby duck and you have baby children, thinking like you know, like.
They grew up with rubber duckies in the bathtub.
Well, the baby duck legit looks like a stuffed animal. So when you have two kids, twins especially, fighting over this, what looks like a stuffed animal duck and pulling apart at like a three-day-old duck, the duck doesn't live. That was one death. My daughter, she loved one chicken recently so much. She was dancing with her. She loves ballet. She was dancing, holding her up, and she jumped and let go of the chicken. And the chicken landed on its head from about 4 feet
up.
She
literally loved it to death. Loved it to death.
That's a good way to put it. Loved it to death. I guess my fifth, Ruby, she's only two. I don't even know what position she might play.
Maybe you start 2 point guards.
She's got to be like a shooting guard.
You start 2 point guards.
Yeah, yeah.
You have you shuffle in. You and Addy could shuffle in as like a...
Yeah, I don't think we have any big men underneath.
Yeah.
I think we're an outside game type team. That's what I'd say. One of my, but I got to tell the story about my oldest, Joseph, who when you visited,
yes,
he's eight now. He's probably five when you
he's
visited.
Big.
Yeah. And you hung out with Armin from Canada, the only Canadian I know, yep. Canadian Indian. And
shout out to Armin.
Shout out.
And Navi.
And yeah, came hang out all day. And we had one of the most respectable beer pyramids we could build of craft beer.
That was nice.
And we drank all of them too, so they were empty. So you know how we were feeling. And when you drink, your left eye starts to close.
Not just when I drink. So
oh, is this progress.
So I could talk about this. I like to talk about these things on this podcast. So I do have like a little bit of a nerve issue in the back of my neck, and it affects my.
Oh really?
My
I don't mean to laugh
side.
At this.
No, this is it. But I get it all the time. I think Joseph is like, he's such a good kid.
And yeah.
I thought it was so funny when he said that.
Yeah.
And I just like think, I always say like to my whispering eye, you ever seen that movie? you ever seen that movie?
Yeah, it's so good.
Is it Grown Ups?
Yeah, it's your whispering eye.
It's like, you say whispering eye. You say whispering eye.
So
yeah.
my son, when he's five, the next morning, when you were gone, right? So the next morning, he said, "Hey, what's wrong with your friend, your Uncle Brad's, your friend's Uncle Brad's eyes?" And I'm like, "Joseph, I'm thinking like this is a parenting lesson, yeah. Joseph. We don't talk about people like that, right? We're all." He goes, "No. His left eye. This eye. He didn't know left. He said this eye. He always talked with this eye closed." I thought he was trying to like. I am thinking like.
Yeah. So. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
You were, if I was like.
I couldn't. I was like.
Oh, Daddy must have been cracking up.
I was dying laughing. Because here I am thinking like this is a gold parenting moment. Right. I'm like, okay, this is how we treat everybody equal. He's like, no. Like, he's like, I got that. We're
different
good there.
Different skin, different eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, he's like, no, we're good there. Like, he talked with one eye closed. That's what he's telling me. I'm like, oh, you know what? When Uncle Brett drinks some beers, that's what happens. That's what I told him.
I appreciate it.
And you know what?
Yeah.
He accepted it.
Yeah. Because that's what kids do.
He knows his papa things happen when he drinks some beers, too.
Yeah. Kids are great like that. I mean.
Yeah. How good is that?
They get to a point, and I think, you know, Joseph may be at a point where you're able to teach him something and tell him something, and he's so receptive to it.
Yeah.
And I think. Yeah. They're funny. I don't have one, obviously, but I I've interacted with them. Like all my friends from high school have kids. And
yep.
They're just a blast. I guess you say they're a blast when they're not yours sometimes.
Yeah.
But they're so receptive, like things like that and moments like that. And I think Joey.
Yeah. He loves
Joseph.
It. Yeah.
Is
he likes
at that
Joseph
point,
better?
Yeah, Joseph's. That's funny.
Until his buddies call him whatever he wants, but
yeah.
So that was a fun. That was a fun story.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I guess
so there's some
taking
sports.
Yeah, sports into family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Life. I guess what I look at you and see what you do. You know, you're doing all the things on Instagram. You're doing the podcast. You have your full-time job. You have a family, which is another full-time job.
Yeah.
And not just any family, a big family.
Right.
You're doing a lot. You're doing a lot. And I look
Thanks.
At you and see, like, it inspires me because I feel like
Thanks.
I don't put pressure on myself, but I feel like I should be doing more because of what I see you doing. So it inspires me to, like, oh, when on days like, oh, I don't feel like coming to the shop or
that's awesome.
I don't feel like doing this. It's like, dude, Matt's like doing, he does more than what I do in 2 hours. Than I do in a friggin' week.
That's awesome. I don't think that's true, but...
No, I think it
but
is.
But I appreciate
no,
it.
No, it's absurd.
Yeah. Thank you. That's cool to hear.
Yeah, so take me through your thought process in terms of, like, I don't mean to get deep again, but...
No, you should get deep. Don't it? You should
let's
mean
get,
to get deep.
Let's get deep.
Yeah.
Take
Hold
me...
Hold on, let me plug my nose.
Take me...
We're diving in.
Take me through your thought process. Not thought process, but how do you... Your time management...
Okay.
And how go through about, oh, do you plan your week out? Like, oh, I'm going to do this on Monday. I think you might have to, obviously.
Yeah.
Every morning might be a routine where you wake up and let the goats out.
I think
that may be your first thing you do.
Yeah. No, not the first.
Really?
I got to get up earlier than that. So my, here's how I look at it. Like, as more and more things have come into my life that are important to me, I have to do a good job of paying attention to the important stuff and do a good job of saying no to the unimportant stuff. And I really like, it sounds cliche, and I thought I was super smart because I thought of this, but like since thinking of it, it's like when you say, I'm going to buy a blue BMW, and then all you see is blue BMWs on the street.
Right.
I thought of this, and now after thinking of it, everybody does this apparently, that all these influencers I follow on Instagram. But I kind of categorize all of my goals for myself in like four buckets or four pillars or whatever you want to call them, of like, and I use all F's because it's easy to remember: family, finance, faith, and fitness. Not in that order, but those are like my four areas of focus. So like I have goals in each of those four areas, and if something shows up in my life where I'm like, yeah, that might help contribute to this goal in this area, I say yes. If somebody says to me like, hey, do you want to go down to Mohegan Sun and just gamble all night? I'm like, well, that doesn't line up with any of the goals I have in those four areas, right? Fun is not a fifth line right now. So I will say no to that and I won't think twice. Mm. So that's kind of how I prioritize, and that helps with the time management. And then from there, having Addie to support like what we're doing together and us being on the same page is huge. And then I just schedule as best I possibly can. And the schedule typically is like, I'll wake up. I've been into lately, and I thought it was woo-woo, and it feels weird sometimes, but I've been trying to meditate. Everybody I learn from, yeah, hear about, say they meditate. I don't even know what that is.
That's the thing now. That's a thing.
I think it, yeah. I just think of it, so it's morning, it's like a morning devotional time, kind of like a quiet time. I'll get up anywhere between like 4:30 and 5:15 is usually like somewhere in that window. And I get up and I'll have coffee.
4:30 in the morning and yeah, 5:15.
Somewhere between those,
I just want to make sure. I want to make sure.
Yeah. So that's where it starts. And then I'll get up, I'll have coffee. I will usually read something, like part of a devotional, and either it's like a scripture or a book or something. And I'll journal. And I'll meditate on, like, kind of just envision some of like what my future may look like, and simultaneously just be like grateful for where I'm at. And from there, that goes to about 5:45, and then the sun starts to rise, and then we go out to the goats about six wow, or so. So from there, from 5:45 till about 6:15, I'll usually do the dishes while I listen to an audiobook. I have a goal to read 50 books this year.
Dude, you're making me feel real bad at myself. No. I'm just kidding.
So I have a goal to listen to 50 books this year. So I'm listening to books on 2X. So if I have 20 minutes while I do dishes, clean up from the night before, because that's kind of like the spousal thing. Like that was my commitment to her, to Addie, is to say like, I'll take care of all dishes. You don't have to do it. That'll go till about 6:15. Usually by then some of the kids are up, and then it's a juggling act between getting the kids breakfast, bottles. I go out, let the animals out, which are 3 goats and 22 chickens, if anybody's counting. Jeez. Let them out, feed them, get them water, come back in. And I'm usually by like 7:45, I am showered, changed. Not showered, changed. Packed for the day, prepped, go to the gym, after gym, work. And I try to get home at a reasonable hour, like 4:30, 5 o'clock. And like, so I have for work stuff, I have a compressed amount of time where I say like, I need to be as effective in 5 to 6 hours as somebody else is in 8 to 10. It's just my life. And then, this is crazy to say, but if dinner doesn't start to get prepped by 4:30 or 5, the kids don't go to bed by 7:30 or 8. That's, so it starts at 4:30. To be ready for an 8 o'clock bed. And after that, then it's time for me and Addie.
Why is that? Just because they need to eat and then digest? And
the time it takes to prep the dinner with 5 kids, and there's always stuff that comes in and out. So like prepping the dinner, making the dinner, eating the dinner, cleaning it up, tubs, changing, having bottles, like, and relaxing before they go back up, brushing teeth, getting them all in bed, times 5, just takes a while. It's the best way to describe it. So like 4:30, it's literally like a 3.5 hour thing. 3 to 3.5 hour thing. So that, as much as I would love to say I could be better, more efficient there, I can't be.
You really can't.
It just happens, and I want to be present for that. So I'm there for that. And then after that, it's usually time with Addie. If we can do it, our brains are typically fried by then, but like we'll try to hang out till like 9:30 or 10, 10:30, and it's bed. And then I do it again.
Do it all over again.
Yeah, crank it out again.
Damn, dude.
That's kind of like a day in the life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like I said, I thought you did a lot. I know you did a lot, but you describing to me in detail, I had no idea.
I literally, that's funny. Yesterday I wrote, because I'm always trying to continuously find ways to be more efficient and improve on myself. And yesterday I wrote down to the best I could, like minute, not minute by minute, but really like within the 10 minute windows of like my entire day. And I found I was like 5 a.m. my alarm went off. 5:10 I woke up. 5:20 I was finally making coffee, because from 5:10 to 5:20 I looked at Instagram. I'm like, that's 20 minutes back. If I just get my ass out of bed at 5 o'clock and go right to what my plan is, I got 20 minutes back on my day.
Yeah, but don't you think you need that time, though? Like, do you need that time to,
I don't
like,
need
zone
to scroll
out?
Instagram.
No?
No, I don't need to scroll
Instagram. So you look at that as, like, time that you could spend with Addie or your kids.
Yeah.
That's more valuable time.
Yeah. Or that, at 5 a.m., that's me time. Okay. So that's me time I'm giving up on.
Yeah.
Me time, if I'm being honest with myself, scrolling through the Instagram isn't serving what any of those four goals that I'm trying to accomplish.
Okay, going back to that.
Yeah,
that's how to come full circle.
Yeah,
there.
I'm telling you, I have to operate my life.
This is interesting stuff. This is really it is for someone like me. I think for someone like Kyle too as well. It's like really eye opening to hear.
Because that's cool.
And that's the whole reason why I'm doing this. Like guy I had, the Spiros from Easy Pie.
Yep, he was cool.
You know, the whole thing of like being on their level in your thought process, what I can get out of it, and also what other people that are listening to you out of it. I think that's super valuable.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So that's how I do it. That's my time management. I'm really happy. Like part of what I've done in to like fill in, like to plug in those what feels like dead time, is I have earbuds. Addie got them for me as a Father's Day gift like a year ago, and I was like, I don't need these. Like, I got my plugins. I'll use those. Those things have been a game changer for me. I can't believe how much more I use those. The wire really does make a difference. And I use that, and I listen to Audible. I listen to books on two times speed. And like while I'm washing dishes, 20 minutes, that's 40 minutes regular time. I go let the animals out, 15 minutes, that's 30 minutes regular time. So I'm on like my 14th book this year.
Damn, dude.
Isn't that crazy? We're only February.
Yeah.
Or 13th book or something like that.
That's crazy.
And it's all by like a result of like drive time is a given. Like I can use that, but that was the only time I was using.
Right.
So I'm like, where can I get time back? Where can I get time back? Right. That's like the big thing in my life.
Technology, man.
Where do I buy time back?
Technology.
So I think about like, how do I get my time back, or how can I really squeeze like a quarter out of this nickels in my time?
Right.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah, it's an eye opener, because like what I try to do here, and as you look around here in the shop, it's organized chaos.
Yeah.
It really is. Like you would, I think Spiro said it best, I wouldn't know where to start. You might not know where to start either.
No, dude, I have no idea what's happening.
But there is a process in these pieces here, believe it or not.
No, I believe that.
And my, not struggle, but what I'm trying to do is the same thing you're trying to do, but in a small scale with this, is try to make it more efficient.
Yeah.
Efficient as possible, because I'm only here for 2 hours a night.
Yeah, it's not smaller, it's just different.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say
it's just different. Scale, it's just different.
It's different.
It's just different, good point. I'm here for 2 hours during the week, Monday through Friday. And then all day Saturday, sometimes all day Sunday, but that's a small window of time. This has become a side hustle and now like probably a second full-time job. So it has to be going on all gears and being as efficient as possible in order for it to succeed. But also going back to the thought, like, I'm okay with it failing too as well, because of the fact that the process that and the learning that I'm going through about myself, about running a business, about dealing with customers, all the things that you experience here by myself is like, I can honestly say, if I obviously want it to succeed, but if it doesn't, I look back on this, it's definitely a good use of my time. So that I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
If that's how I look at it, I look at it to be a success no matter what happens later on.
Totally. Good for you.
Yeah, it's
awesome. It's like my minor league career where I didn't make the big leagues, but it wasn't a failure in my mind. Like, that shaped me who I am as a man. So yeah, totally get it. Although making the big leagues is a whole lot cooler than it failing.
It'll be a lot cooler if you did.
Damn game!
It'll be a lot cooler if you did. Okay, what's next on the... I think we need a refill.
So. On that beer list?
We have Tadao. By our other half.
How do you not drink that all the time?
I picked this up today, and you know, going back to the beer thing, I know
Galaxy
we're going back and forth.
Double dry hop, got that Axie
double dry hop 4 point. I think it's one of the, when they started double dry hop in this, they started double dry hop in Vicinity.
Yeah, well, that was outrageous.
They started double dry hopping Metal.
Nah, I didn't try it, but I'm so mad I didn't.
Those are next level.
Yeah.
Trillium beers.
Vicinity, like that,
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why they took this long to do it, but there's some. they did it. They finally did it. By the way, they're doing the anniversary party.
Yeah.
And they're releasing
some stout.
It might, some stout. You saw that today. Mm-hmm. Rumor on the street, it's a double barrel affogato. That's just a rumor.
It's a heck of a rumor.
So that would be exciting if that happens.
Yeah, then
even more streets or something like that, like an amped up version of streets.
Okay.
So that's the talk right now. So it's for you talk. Beer fanatics.
It's big and craft beer talk.
We're gonna do some beer talk
mm-hmm.
in future episodes. I figured I'd start with Matt because he appreciates it.
Yeah, I'll come back.
He'll just sit in the back
and
be like,
talk. I'll just drink the beers you talk about.
Yeah. Financial services.
Okay.
Let's go
there.
What is finance?
It's a well respected industry.
So
we've had no issues.
I guess
in
we
a
talk
while.
About like what's thought. I'm curious. I think you have it in your bio. I skimmed it, man. I'm sorry.
You didn't do your homework on
I
me
skimmed,
like others.
I skimmed.
What knowing me 20 years is enough.
Yeah, I know you more on a more personal level. But how did you and Ben Beck, former NU Husky?
Yep.
How did you guys get hooked up and that sort of thing?
We were connected through, so shame on Northeastern Athletics Alumni Association.
Shame on them.
Hope they're not listening, but I hope they are.
No, hope they're listening.
Yep.
I feel like
they need to know about this.
They fall short of this.
Yeah, so Ben and I missed playing on the same team. You were a teammate of Ben's, right, at some point?
Yeah.
So we missed on the same team as by 1 year. So his year out was my year in.
Right.
So we shared teammates, including you. But it took a tennis player from Brandeis, Chris Hursel, who's a friend of mine, neighbor.
Brando, right up the street.
Brando, yeah, that he introduced us.
Really?
He's like, man, you got to meet this guy that's in, he has his own investment firm out of Merrill Lynch originally. He actually played baseball, I think at Northeastern is how he says it. And I think he's got a big family. He's into CrossFit. Like, I think you're going to like him.
He's a big CrossFit.
He's
huge.
Shredded
right now.
Yeah, he's in good shape.
I saw him in. He throws up the IG videos. He's doing 8x500 meters and freaking a balcony at Aruba. Come on, Ben.
Come on, Ben.
If you listen to this, come on, buddy.
Ben, let's go.
Come on.
Right?
All right, go ahead.
Just take the umbrella and the drink and relax.
I had to say that. I had to say that.
So Chris Hursel introduced us. I sat down with him with the intent. So Chris knew that I wasn't really happy with my previous work at K-Force, although the work was going well, dude. Like, I went to Cabo and I was going to Atlantis from, like, it's a big sales staffing company, top performing trips.
Not a bad gig.
No.
Yeah.
So it was going well, except I didn't enjoy the work. And Chris knew it, so I think when he made the intro, he's like, hey, look, he's not super happy. But it wasn't that he wants to go into wealth management. He wants to go, and maybe you have some clients who's in, I was thinking like healthcare, tech, sales.
Yeah.
So he's like, maybe you have some clients in like the tech sales world that might be looking for new hires. He'd be a good fit. He's a good sales guy. And so that was kind of the premise I met Ben at. And in our conversation, he was like, man, have you ever considered wealth management as a career? And that's kind of how it started. Then I did a ton of homework because I had met a number of advisors, financial advisors, that I just was unimpressed with. Like you can take any big bank name. Like if I was sitting across from a guy and he told me what he did, because I was, as a minor leaguer, I fooled some dudes that like thinking I was going to make money one day. Like I was sitting across the table from a bunch of guys that like, if you took the Merrill Lynch hat off one guy and put on a Goldman Sachs hat, and then you took that off, put on a Morgan Stanley hat, like, and they all told me what they did, like I wouldn't be able to put the hats back on the right person because I wouldn't be able to figure out. They all sounded the same to me.
Yeah, what's that sound apart? Yeah.
Yeah, and I just kind of wasn't interested in. I love the markets. I love making money in them. I think that's really cool. I had no interest in being those guys I met across the table from me. So it wasn't until I learned like how we manage money, what Ben and Jim Bodie had been up to at Merrill previously and now on their own, that really attracted me. And it's just because of the level of attention we pay, and there's related to investing, like they are actually doing the work. We are actually investing the money. We aren't farming it out to like funds around the country, in short. So I got really excited and intrigued by that, and I did my homework on them, on the industry. And the more I did my homework, the more I realized like everything I felt about the industry was true. Everything I learned about us was different, and it was better. So I went from like, man, I'm not interested. I actually told him the first time. I'm like, man, I appreciate the offer, but I have no interest in it. No offense.
Yeah, you think you mentioned that before.
Yeah, yeah, I was like, no offense, but
like, sorry.
Here's,
yeah, I'm like,
I told him everything I just told you about like meeting those guys. I'm like, nah, that's, I don't have an interest in being that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I learned how we did stuff. So I went from a no way to a I got to do this. And that's how it started.
Okay.
So I don't think I answered what is finance.
No, you don't have to get into that. I think I transitioned into, because yeah, I know Ben.
Money management, yeah.
We both know Ben, and that's how it happened. I think that's really cool. And I think
yeah,
you're right, going back to Northeastern and alumni, they don't really do a good job. Like, we have a big network, and I think Mike Glab is doing a good job of like,
yeah,
they have the mentorship program now, which yeah, you're a part of. And
yeah,
also,
yeah,
kudos to you for being a part of the Kansas City Royals mentorship program. I think
yeah,
that's a big honor.
Shout out to you, dude,
being a part of that. The fact that they're able yeah, to think of you in that light, and you know, you were in that organization, you yeah, obviously made an impact on them.
That was an
in a positive
honor,
way.
Yeah.
And
huge honor.
Everything you just said about your experience with them and being a player and how much you learned, obviously that translated into and led to
yeah,
you being asked to do that. Can you tell me a little bit more about
that?
What was that? Yeah, what was that like?
Anyway. That was a shock.
Yeah.
And I will, so this is weird. And I know I told you about it earlier in the podcast. If anybody's hanging in this long, thanks. But
it's like these guys are just drinking beer and
yeah,
having fun.
I told you earlier I was like getting into this like meditation. Part of it is like visualizing kind of your future, just in the same way you visualize at bats and stuff. It's no different.
At bats or
yeah,
drives on the golf course.
Yeah, same idea. It's just sort of like yeah, visualizing like AWOL being in on the 21st floor of some high, I don't know. That wouldn't make sense maybe, but maybe it would. I don't know.
I know what you mean.
So I was visualizing like and some of the visualizations I was like, some like the goals I was setting, like an example is, I was like, I'm trying to, after a couple years in the finance industry, realizing how important it is to have walked in the shoes of the person you're sitting across from in some way, how important that is. I'm like, man, I gotta work with more athletes. I love it, and it's really impactful when I'm across from an athlete talking about my story. They're like, yeah, man, I get it. You get me, I get you, we feel good together. So I'm like, I got to work with more athletes. And I, how do I work with more athletes? I'm like, well, I talked to a bunch of ex-teammates. They were like, man, my agent referred somebody to me. So I'm like, okay, let me learn about agents. I read Lee Steinberg had a book. Lee Steinberg is the real life Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
The movie that, so I read about him and his life as an agent, just to learn the life, what a life of an agent is like, not on the Hollywood version, but like his story. And I'm like, I have to be connected to Lee Steinberg. I got to understand that. And simultaneously, I was really getting into Ed Mylett as a guy who's out there on Instagram as like a Tony Robbins type, like motivational guy. But he grew up in the financial services world, former baseball player, now lives in a baller home in Laguna Beach on the water.
I saw that on your feed, yeah.
So fast forward like 18 months from when I'm starting to sit and try and really visualize like these guys in my lives. not this past Super Bowl in Miami, before in Atlanta, I found myself at Lee Steinberg's party, getting to be in the same place as him. And a little bit later after that, I'm in Ed Mylett's Laguna Beach living room overlooking his water, interviewing him on a podcast. I'm like, wow, this stuff is bananas. This might actually work to some degree. I forget where we start. How did that question start? Because there was
the mentorship program for
the Royals. So partly working with athletes, I'm thinking like, man, how do I get back with them? In around that same time, a little bit after, I got these random calls from Kansas City, and I ignored them because I get random calls all around the country all the time. And then I got a follow-up email like, hey, Matt, this is Jeff from the Royals. I work for their player development. We are rolling out this mentorship program. I talked to J.J. Piccolo, who's now the assistant GM. He was the director of player development at the time. He's like, I talked to him about who might be good mentors to pilot this program. And in the last 15 years that he's been there, he's like, out of anybody, he's picked you and two other guys. I'm like, is this a joke? Because I'm like, man, there's plenty of dudes that have come through that organization that like, you could have picked other guys. But I called him back. I'm like, hey, what is this about? And it turned out he was real and it was legit. And JJ did choose me and two other dudes. And it was not because of batting average. I can promise you that. and it was like, and just this past January, they flew the three of us mentors out for like a player orientation out into Kauffman Stadium. And it was an incredible experience to kind of like give back, and kind of like we just shared our stories about like college ball. It was similar, but like sharing about spring training and that, all that stuff. And I was like, wow, this is like life-changing stuff, not just for me, but for the people that are actually going to be like...
That was Alexa, sorry.
Alexa talk. Be like, you know, everything we talked about at the very beginning of the podcast, where like you get to give back to other dudes and actually help guys realize stuff that you didn't maybe know in the moment and help transform their life. What a cool opportunity it has been. So that's how that all started. Kudos to the Royals for developing not only good baseball players but good men. That's the whole rationale behind it, because something like maybe on average 11% of baseball players in the minors make it to the bigs. So they realize like 90% of these dudes basically are going to be out of here trying to find real life work. It's on us to train them and to coach them on being good men, not just good baseball guys. So that's our role in their life, is like to help them on the field, but to help them off the field. And I give them the Royals a lot of credit for actually like thinking about that proactively. And it's just an honor for them to choose me among anybody they could have picked.
Dude, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Congrats on that. Thanks, dude. When I saw that, I was like, man,
it's crazy.
That's a crazy honor. I couldn't think of anyone more deserving than that.
Yeah, thank you.
Even more so now talking to you more about the detail.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, more and more teams are doing that, I think. Because I spoke to Luke the other day.
Oh, cool.
We still keep in touch. I actually printed some t-shirts.
The
Indians? Yeah, he's awesome. Still there. So
DeCenzo
Just got a job there.
I just texted him on the way in here.
Awesome. We'll get him on the podcast. Luke's going to be on here, definitely. But yeah, DeCenzo's coaching single A, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so too.
That's awesome. I mean, the roots are strong in Northeastern. But Luke is now moving, like he's transitioning more to a front office role.
Awesome.
Less travel, which is good for his family.
Yeah.
But they're doing something similar where they brought in...
Oh, cool.
the sergeant or captain for SEAL Team 6, the team that killed the bomb.
Yeah.
Somehow they got him.
Wow.
Actually, our current president wanted him to come back and work for the government.
Wow.
So he got an offer from the president himself. And he's mid-40s, I think, right now. So he's looking to get out of the game and do something.
Dang.
Less demanding, but not less demanding, but you know what I mean. Like, yeah. Something more fun.
Yeah.
Something different.
Yeah.
Because I think if you go back to the government, you're still doing
this. That's real heavy work.
Yeah.
Real heavy.
So he got, the Indians hired him, and he's doing a team development program.
Wow.
I printed some t-shirts for that program, yeah, which is awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so he's doing this team development program, and Luke, he kind of took Luke under his wing for some reason. I mean, you know, Luke.
Luke's got that military attitude. Luke's a charismatic
dude. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got that, like, serious,
yeah,
no nonsense attitude if he wants to.
Yeah, right.
Which, I'm a military right. dude. He's attracted to it.
Just like you, he has a good head on his shoulders in terms of,
yeah,
visualizing stuff and making it happen.
Yeah.
You know, he obviously played in the show.
Yeah,
you know, more than a cup of coffee, I could say.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, we keep in touch, and he mentioned that, and I was like, oh yeah. Once he said that, I was like, that's probably what Matt's doing. Like,
yeah,
that's the same type of thing that,
yeah,
you got asked to do.
Just Trump hasn't asked me to work for him. That's the only difference.
And
I haven't killed any world threats yet.
But it's just interesting to think back on. Well, not think back, but think about how those professional baseball organizations are now looking to that.
Yeah.
Not only is it going to make them better men, but also it's going to help their organization. Like, those players are going to become better teammates.
Yeah.
They're going to become,
truthfully, maybe better players.
Better players.
Yeah.
Mentally.
Yeah.
Because
it is mental.
It's mental.
So
it's a mental fucking game.
Yeah, totally is. Watch your mouth, though.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
serious podcast. We're
hanging getting in there. This. We got two more to go. It's because when you, I'm going back to what we experienced in college and us being a team, we were a team.
Totally.
Like, you said that, you know, off the field, this, we won't name names, but there's some people that you like, you chose not to hang out with.
Totally.
There's some people that you like, I'm not going to go to that party because I know he's going to be there.
Yeah. I'm not calling him.
So you chose to stay home in your room, play cast with your roommates. Yeah. It's cool, you know. So you know why that happens. But, like, what sets you apart, meaning the team, from other teams is that once you step in between those lines, you're able to put those things aside and say, fuck it.
Yeah.
We have one goal, a common goal.
Yep.
And that's adversity. So going, you know, overcoming that and going, doing everything you can to accomplish that team goal, it's a special thing.
Yep.
And it's simply said, but it's a special thing.
Yep.
So that's what I think these pro teams are going after.
Yeah.
Because it's not so easy when you have a kid from Northeastern, a kid from Alabama.
Totally.
A kid from UNC Wilmington, a kid from Florida that have different agendas.
Yeah.
A first round pick, a third round pick, a 30th round pick, 18th round pick.
Yeah.
Have different situations.
Yeah.
They're trying to bring that together, I think, and figure out, is this, you know, this is worth their time and worth their money to say, hey, you know, is this going to make us a better organization?
Yep.
I think it's worth it because it's more, like you said, it's more of a mental game at that point.
Yeah.
Because of the grind.
Yeah.
You're away from your family. You're traveling, 7-day road trips on a friggin' bus.
Yeah. Yep. Until you're in AAA, you're not touching a plane.
Yeah.
So
that, I think that, yeah, going back to what you just said about being asked to do that, I think that's,
yeah, it's a huge honor.
Yeah.
So really excited about that, and it's really cool to think, like, man, some of this stuff that I just, like, sit and think about in my head and picture myself and feel myself in those moments, like, some of them come true.
Yeah.
in short
keeps
order.
It keeps you involved in, like, that team game too as well. I mean, in athletics and sports, because when you're out of the game,
No doubt.
There is a transition period where...
Totally.
You try to figure out where you can be. Like, I played for... You know, the Cranberry League for 8 or 9 years after I was out of college, and that kept me going, keep that competitive spirit and releasing it in some way.
Yeah.
But all, it's not the same as college.
Not the same.
But it's fun. But you know, after that's over, like, what do you... There's a transition period for people that play any college, any level of college athletics.
Yeah, because agreed.
You know, when you're done playing, you're done playing.
Agreed.
So, what was I getting out of that?
I'm not sure.
What were we talking about?
It's awesome.
Is it time for us to end this episode?
Maybe it is. Maybe it is. I don't know what else I could share about. There's a lot of onion layers to this onion, but
no, I mean the adjustment of just being living a normal life.
Yeah, it was
not a normal life, but like just
It's tough to say my life is normal with 5 kids and a farm, but there is an adjustment to playing on a team sport and then having, like, for example, I remember I had to learn to call people by their first name. That was a big difference. Playing team sports, I called everybody the last name or a nickname.
Right, right.
And then I get into like an office, and everybody had a first name that I had to go by. That's weird. That's like a little adjustment.
And they're not always like American names either.
Yeah, not always American.
Some Latin names.
And they're not always kind of driven like you think, like I am. And I realize, like, college sports, professional sports, you're in this little bubble of people who are all, for the most part, like high-achieving, goal-oriented type people. And then you hit the real world and you're like, well, I guess not everybody thinks that way. Mm. You know, the reason those people got to that level of sports success, aside from their physical abilities, is that like mental mindset. But outside of those high levels of success in sport, like, not everybody shares those mindsets. And that was a big learning experience for me, is like, oh, you think that this guy didn't call you back and that's his fault and he's the bad guy and he's a jerk for talking to you yelling at you on a cold call?
You think it's because,
like, figure that out.
Of things, the exact things that we learn through, you know, sports and stuff like that. It's,
yeah,
going through that it's a weird, it's, I hate to say it, but like, I feel like we're more in tune to deal with those things.
Yeah, agreed. You're able to own your mistakes.
Yeah,
exactly. Much more easily.
When we play a sport that...
Yeah, you have to own your mistake.
Yeah, because you fail 7 out of 10 times. And you're like, oh yeah, I'm awesome.
You're awesome.
I'm awesome.
Right.
Exactly. Which is weird, right?
Yeah.
It's an individual sport, but it's also a team sport too as well.
Yeah.
So it's like you're bouncing back and forth. Oh, I want to, you know, I want to drive this dude in. I want to, you know, get a hit because he struck out. But you're also thinking about, oh, well, what if my average is going to go down because of this?
That's right. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
You know, it's just a weird, that's what makes it awesome. People don't like, I mean, I can honestly say I don't like watching baseball. It's a slow game.
But, it is a slow game.
But when you're in it.
Totally different.
It's a different story.
Yeah.
It's a different story.
It's completely different.
Yeah. I think we'll close it on that point.
Yeah. I love it.
I appreciate you being here, Matt. I'm really
fired up to be here. It was awesome.
Taking the time out of your busy life.
It's so good. Thanks, Addy, for this.
Thanks, Addy. Shout out to Addy for letting your man be here.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think the reason why I brought you here, because I think you had a lot of interesting things to share about.
Thanks.
Not just sports, but what you've been through,
your
family life,
all
those things that I think can help other people. So, and that's what it's all about, and that's why I started this thing. So
that's,
I appreciate
awesome.
You being here.
I will say, like, I'll leave it on this. The one thing I've learned in conversation with the most successful people in whatever their craft, baseball, business, whatever, is they're really, really intentional with everything they do.
Mm.
There aren't parts of their life that they just kind of coast with. Like, if they're driving they're intentional with what they're doing while they drive. If they're having dinner with the family, like they're radically present during that dinner with the family. There's nothing that they do by chance or by accident and without an intentional focus of that moment. And I always think about that stuff too, because half the time I find myself like, you know, with my thumb flying up, flipping through Instagram, and I'm like, the hell am I? There's literally nothing I'm trying to accomplish here besides like scatter my brain. Yeah. So I think about that all the time, and I think that's an important thing for anybody that made it all the way this long to listen to, is to realize like the elite have a purpose for all the stuff they do. That's that's been the most impressive thing that I've learned from talking to some high achieving people.
Awesome. Awesome. Great stuff. Live life with intent, and also
I like that.
Four pillars.
Four pillars.
Four pillars. Four F's.
Four so F's. I love it.
Thanks for being here, Zio. Awesome, I appreciate it. Waiting on
Thank
that.
You.
Until next time, this is a podcast with AOL Print Shop, episode 4. Thank you.